So we're just going to kind of go with the flow here as we get into it, and you want to bring in one of these sonics, just sort of start to talk about it, and then I'll hold the number up for Dan to see, and we'll just kind of
okay. What do you anticipate the first couple of being that you'll talk about, just so I can have them ready?
Do you want to talk about the Zumba first, since it's the first week of class? Was Whale Love the first week of class too?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's. Well, maybe because we're going to be starting about who's coming, maybe we should start with Zumba.
Sure.
That sound good?
These are older ones.
Remember that story?
Because I don't really remember. Yeah, I remember that story.
Okay.
Too many. Okay. All right, we'll start right at 50, Dan. Does that work?
Okay, yes.
I met the Zumba person. She listened to it.
Today's story is from the Transom.org workshops. You may have heard us from time to time refer to these workshops over the last couple of years and the radio producers who come through this program from around the globe. Today we get into the nitty-gritty of what it's all about and hear some examples of the work. The Transom Story Workshops were founded by radio producer Jay Allison, who also happens to be the founder of WCAI. Good morning, Jay.
Hey, Mindy.
And also joining us in studio is Rob Rosenthal, Transom Story Workshops lead instructor. Good morning, Rob.
Hello.
And Sarah Reynolds, associate instructor. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi, Mindy.
All right, Jay, this comes out of Transom.org. So for folks who aren't familiar with that, tell us what Transom.org is.
Transom was one of the kind of web 1.0 sites that we began now almost 13 years ago as a way to extend public radio's mission to the then nascent web and figure out how we could use the internet to enliven public radio, mainly by handing out free tools and ideas and philosophy and mission so that people could go to this website, get everything they needed to tell their own stories. Mm-hmm. And it became a great success. It was the first website ever to win a Peabody Award for broadcasting. And we've had every notable radio producer, mostly public radio people, because that's our interest, visit the site and take part and pass on their ideas. And it has in turn trained people all over this country and around the world in the skills and purpose of public radio.
Yeah. Now, where did the idea for the workshops come from? We just had the fifth graduation, so five sessions we've had so far.
Right.
So where did this idea come from?
Well, we'd been brewing it for a long time, thinking we ought to do something actual in the midst of all our virtual work. And it would be nice to do something here where we live. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you think, God, if you start a school, you're going to have to do insurance and you're going to have to get, I don't know what, dormitories and make beds. It just seemed like too much. But then Rob Rosenthal, who's sitting here next to me, was suddenly at liberty from his job at the SALT Institute for Documentary Studies. And he'd been a great trainer and turned out all sorts of people who ended up working in public broadcasting. You'd know their names or their work if you listen to much public radio. And we thought, well, he has to keep teaching, so I guess we're going to have to do this.
So what you thought, okay, you want me to come to Woods Hole? And what these,
I know, it was awful. Yeah, I thought it was a terrible idea. Yeah. They had to drag me here to teach.
Kicking and screaming.
Yeah, it was heinous.
So it's 8 weeks, right?
It is 8 weeks. Yeah. Eight intense weeks.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure you learned a little bit over the five sessions that you've had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that first class that came through. You've had some amazing, for folks who have gone and listened to the graduations where we hear the examples of the work, you can't believe that these people aren't seasoned radio producers. So it's got to be pretty intense, an intense course.
Yeah, people sweat all 8 weeks. We think we've got Weight Watchers beat. Just join the Transom Story Workshop and you will lose weight and learn how to produce great radio at the same time. And most of the students come without any experience. I mean, sometimes there's dabblers, people who have started their own podcast or they've produced a piece here and there. But most of them are brand new to radio. And so we take them pretty much from zero to producer in 8 weeks. Mm. Rough around the edges still, but I would say producer, ready to go, ready to go make radio.
And they do stay here, so you do have that dormitory situation.
Yeah, we did. We found houses for them. We don't make their beds exactly, but they're all mostly grown-ups. I guess the youngest has been, what, 18?
19,
yeah.
Maybe.
Robbie.
Robbie.
Oh, right.
He was still an undergrad in Maryland, University of Maryland. Yeah.
And now he's into their 60s.
Yeah, exactly.
Diverse age. But we rent a couple houses. We only do it in the shoulder seasons, in the spring and the fall, because that's the only time we can afford the rent around here. And then one of our houses, which is a beautiful house right on Eel Pond, is where we gather all of us and sometimes have meals, and we have guests. And this last session, Ira Glass came up, Jonathan Harris, the great web artist. And Andrea Seabrook, who was NPR's congressional correspondent, now has a podcast, Decode DC. And they come up, and people like that come up and teach. And
So what's the criteria? I mean, there's a process, obviously, to get into. You can only take so many people. How many do you take?
Nine.
We take nine.
Nine. Okay, so I'm sure you get a lot more applications than nine. So how do you decide?
Well, we typically get between 25 and 30 applications. The very first time we did the workshop in fall of 11, we got 59 applications.
Wow.
We went blind reading through the applications. It was insane.
That's why we do radio now.
Yeah, exactly. Nicely done. And, you know, we're basically looking for people who – we're looking for two things, at least in my mind when I read through the applications. We're looking for someone who's got the fire in the belly, someone who expresses – deep and abiding passion for public radio and storytelling. If you don't have that, it's going to be really hard to make it through the workshop and afterwards. So we're really looking for the fire in the belly. And then we're looking for people who can, you know, tell a story in their application through their writing, or maybe there's an audio file that they attach that shows some sort of promise as a radio producer. Mm-hmm. Those two things.
So, Jay, who makes the decision? Is it a group of you? Or?
Yeah. You know, Vicki Merrick and Samantha Brown and Sydney Lewis are actually, they make the decision. I used to, but I said, I'm not going to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And Rob advises, but he doesn't actually make the decision because he's got to teach him.
Right.
So, so those three really... And they're very good, you know, and I think in some way they select a group that has great chemistry one with the other, because each of these groups leave here really cemented and kind of, you know, bonded for life.
Yeah. And can I add one thing? I think one thing also that's sort of special about who gets or who ends up here, and I think probably even the people that don't get in that apply are in this place, but it's always people that are in this moment of transition where they're sort of they're trying to figure out what to do next with their life, or, you know, they've loved radio forever, but they've always had this other job. And finally this workshop shows up and it's like, I'm just going to quit my job and go there. Cause it's an awkward amount of time. You know, you can't really, I mean, a couple of people have managed to do it, but it's hard to get a 2 month leave of absence.
I'm going to be gone for 8 weeks. Yeah.
But what that makes is like this really beautiful concoction of people kind of really hungry for something new and for like, I don't know, like an just totally inspired to create and find things. And that is just an amazing thing. Yeah. I mean, that's
I would imagine, huge. Too, for them, just they inspire each other. But then, you know, Ira Glasses and, you know, Andrew Sibrooks and all these other folks who come in. It's got to be, I mean, I would even think it's a bit overwhelming with all this inspiration.
Yeah, oh my God.
Going
I think
on.
It is definitely overwhelming for everybody, us and them, I think, often.
Has the curriculum changed since the first session? What is the curriculum? What's that like?
We make adjustments here and there, but it's remained relatively the same. The students are here to produce two stories primarily. That's their main charge. There's other things that they do, but that's primarily what they do. And the first type of story that they do is a creative life story. That's the series that Jay curates and airs here on the station. And
every other Friday?
Yes, thank you. And we think it's great for them to be able to plug into that. It gives them a corral to sort of work in. If you start with someone who's never done something before and they can be infinite in all directions, they will be.
Yeah.
And they just won't make anything. It'll become mush. So if we give them this corral sort of to work in and we plug into a series that's already on the air, it makes it a real world project as opposed to something in an ivory tower somewhere or a firehouse here in Woods Hole. And then the second story they produce, then they can be infinite in all directions. Still has to be a story, but they get to choose. The subject matter varies widely. They also have to produce a 30-second promo, like a little announcement advertising a show. Usually it's fictitious. They have to do a vox pop where they go out in the street and interview strangers and produce a 90-second little piece about people's opinion on a particular subject. And they have to produce sonics, mm-hmm. the sonic IDs.
A little audio.
Yeah, we
vignettes.
Started that later, yeah. but that's great. Yeah. It's yeah. so yeah, much it's fun to yeah. make those. And
well, and that's what I think where we're going to start, Sarah. So yep. so as they we get here day one, the students come in. We mentioned it's a little bit intimidating. So this talk about what we're going to hear is from Dylan McCoy, and this was his first week.
It was her first
her
week.
Her first week.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And it, the thing that Rob, the two things that Rob just mentioned, the sonic and the vox pop. Sorry, the promo and the vox pop are both produced in the first week. Mm-hmm. So they're just we call it radio boot camp. They're just sort mm-hmm. of thrown in. And they have to go out, like the day one they're already at, we hand out their gear, we teach them how it works, and they just go out into the street. And so this ended up being this thing we're going to play now by Dylan. This was a sonic ultimately, but she recorded this, if I remember correctly, in her first week that she was here, just vox popping people. So that's vox populi, just the voice of the people. So they go out for a few hours and gather all this tape and come back and we listen to it. So
Diana Kenny of Barnstable.
I'm a writer. I work at the MBL, and I sometimes need to just get out of my chair and move a little. So I just came outside and I was working out a routine for a Zumba class. I also teach Zumba. I've been dancing my whole life, and I love to make up dances. So I do a lot of my own choreography. The song is Beyoncé's "Love on Top."
Bring the beat in.
I do a lot of it in the car, driving to and from work. I live in Barnstable, but in the car, you know. People will be driving by and you can see me like, you know, dancing in my seat, but I listen to the music over and over and over and over and over. Like I have to love a song because I have to listen to it a lot in order to choreograph it. And I just think about what I'm going to do. And then once I get out of the car, I try and see if it works.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH, online at capeandislands.org.
Now, a lot of fun. I mean, I'm sure you guys, when you hear some of the tape, they come back with. But as beginners, I'm thinking they may be collecting probably a lot more sound than they need. So that yeah. becomes a chore in itself. It's to cutting down to what's actually going to get on the air.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you. Yes, there's a lot of tape that's collected and a lot that isn't used. But I think that's also something that happens to those of us who are more experienced radio mm-hmm. producers. I mean, you're always getting more than you need. In fact, it's better to have more than you need.
Than less.
But yes, in the beginning, there also is this like newbie paranoia, you know, so it's like we need to get every little moment that we can. And so, yeah, there's a lot more tape. So this is definitely edited down. But I mean, I think this was just a moment where like Dylan had this woman coming out from work or maybe she was in the car. I can't remember exactly at the ferry dock and just like stuck a mic in her face and asked her a few questions. And people really... You know, I think the good thing about this lesson in the first week is like mostly people are willing to talk to you and they yeah. have something to say. And that's, I think, the fear that a lot of students have is, I don't know, do they want to talk to me? I'm so embarrassed with these headphones on and this big mic in people's faces. But if you just act like a human kind of interested in another person, people want to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, the whole world changes when you have a mic. It's like, I don't know if you can remember the first time you picked up a camera and looked through it and suddenly just putting that frame around mm-hmm. reality made everything vivid and different. And listening through headphones or recording and then bringing back what you captured in a sense makes you appreciate the sonic reality of the planet in mm-hmm. a different way. And some people get really addicted to it, yeah. like all of us.
Here we
in
are.
In this room, exactly. So Rob, one of the things I imagine that's got to be tough is some people take criticism better than others. And I'm sure you guys provide constructive criticism, but is that a tough area when somebody's feelings get hurt because you don't think the sound they got is arable?
Never.
You're asking me to reveal the secrets. I think that I don't know how to criticize very well, and I'm still learning how to do it. But it seems as though there needs to be a kind of middle ground where you are simultaneously suggesting to people, you know, you might want to think about trying it this way, and telling them how they're doing well, especially for people who are just putting themselves out in the world like right. that. It's a very tender place to be.
Sure.
We put them high on the ropes, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to start berating them with all the changes that I think they need to make. It's mm-hmm. a combination of you're doing great.
But,
I'm looking up into the sky, by the way. You're doing great up there on the ropes. Hold on tight. And while you're up there, think about changing direction in this particular way. It's that middle ground somewhere.
I also think the critique is more general in the beginning. So we're talking about like this is what a narrative is, a narrative arc. Here's how to think about beginning, middles, and ends. And so then the more sort of finite critique comes when they're more calloused, I think, mm-hmm. when they've, you know, gotten a little bit more of more confidence out in the field. And then that sort of trickier stuff comes later. And that seems to work well.
Yeah. Remind our listeners, you're listening to The Point. We are talking about the Transom.org Story Workshops with Jay Allison, the founder, and Rob Rosenthal, a Transom Story Workshop lead instructor, and Sarah Reynolds, associate instructor. And we've got way more examples than we're ever going to be able to get to in this hour. Maybe we should hear a creative life. What do you think? Which one should we go with? Something new, the beatbox one?
Sure, why not?
So tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear.
This was Jennifer Jarrett. She's what, in her 40s, I think.
Yeah,
she's living in Wyoming, and she just picked up and came to the Cape. Change of life sort of situation for her. She no longer wanted to do what she was doing, and now she wants to make radio. And this is her first radio piece ever. She's really a big fan of music, and she did, well, you know what? I'm not going to give it away.
Yeah,
she's done this story.
All right, here we go.
Dan Blyda takes the stage dressed as Elvis. He's wearing a wig and a stretch velvet shirt, which is backless.
There's costumes, obviously. Some more bizarre than others.
It's a full house at the Cultural Center of Cape Cod, and there are special effects.
We've got a light rig, we have lasers.
And bubble machines. And we blew two fuses tonight already.
The music starts and it's thundering.
It's loud. It's very loud.
Flat out, hardcore polka. Meet Polka Dan and the Beatbox Band. That's Beat with two E's.
I'm Robin Smith Johnson. I play the keyboard.
My name's Greg Johnson. I play bass in the band.
Clayton March. I play mostly clarinet.
David Silver. I play the drums.
Hi, I'm Dan Blyda, also known as Polka Dan. I guess I would be called the leader of the band.
Polka Dan and the Beatbox Band play neighborhood bars and parties around Cape Cod, usually to small but exuberant audiences. The band isn't a full-time gig, everyone has day jobs, yet they've released two CDs in the 4 years they've been together. They've even done techno and dubstep polka remixes, and while their rock and roll vibe is all in good fun, ultimately they consider themselves traditionalists, preservationists, and as Dan Blyda and Clayton March say, they're fighting to keep polka alive.
It's a lost music that generations have just discarded.
If I say, I'm going out to play polka, almost always people think I'm going to play cards.
The band wants people to understand polka, understand that their music is folk music. It's heritage music, with strong roots in tradition and craft. Take this original song, Sophia, from their second CD. This is bassist Greg Johnson.
I think the writing of Eastern European music is very sophisticated and subtle, maybe ancient in a way.
Polka Dan descends from a line of Eastern European musicians that goes back generations. His beet farming ancestors established the Pudelko family ensemble in southern Poland. They're a great example of the distinctive polka sound of the region.
Well, in the region around Rzeszów, that's like the major southern city in Poland, they use a series of clarinets and violins, string bass, but their key rhythm instrument is the hammer dulcimer or cymbalum. So it's really a nice sound.
You can hear that in this song, played by the Pudelko Family Ensemble.
It's different. It's very different. We don't sound anything like it.
Rasva! Rasva!
And this is Polka Dan and the Beatbox Band's modern interpretation. The Pudelko family music is often at the heart of the beatbox sound, and this weaving of modern with traditional is gaining ground with a surprisingly diverse audience.
The current sound is something that really speaks to so many different types of people. We will get the little old ladies from Poland who will come out to the show dressed in traditional Polish costumes, and we have teenage boys who just basically headbangers, long hair, and just rocking their heads back and forth. And little kids love this band.
This whole scene comes alive on the dance floor at the Cultural Center. Whirling couples with bouncy, syncopated footwork, some dancers clearly have their polka steps dialed. What others lack in technique, they make up for in spirit. Tonight, there's even a cat that makes his appearance on the dance floor. You can't make this stuff up. And at the end of the day, this might be the thing the band loves the most. Gathering people together in community and barely controlled celebration.
And that's what it's all about. It's happy music, it's fun music, and we have a good time doing it.
From the dance floor at the Cultural Center of Cape Cod in South Yarmouth, I'm Jennifer Jarrett for WCAI.
Nastrovia.
So hard to believe that that's our first piece. That's one of the things I find so interesting with these, when you get to go to the graduation and listen to some of the pieces they put together. I remember when I started in radio, and it took me years to be able to find my voice and, you know, be able to tell a story. They just seem so natural.
Well, they have good teachers, and they teach each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we have great engineer Jeff Town, who is our tools guy on Transom, come up and work with them on the software we use. So
Vicky works with them on voicing.
Yeah, and Vicky helps them voice. So the pieces.
She's the goddess of the voice.
She does really amazing work with just bringing people out into themselves.
Yeah. Michelle, we're talking about the Transom story workshops, transom.org story workshops with Jay Allison, Rob Rosenthal, and Sarah Reynolds. In a couple of minutes, we're going to hear, I think, probably my all-time favorite piece, and it's a long piece, really intense. I don't think you'll hear this anywhere else, so hang on for that. But since Jennifer was part of this latest group, let's talk about a couple of sonics that are little audio vignettes that haven't been aired yet. So these are something new. You haven't heard them yet. Rob, let's start with the scallop one because you love this guy.
We have to. This is stellar.
It's a found poem.
You know where there's scallops, and there's a lot of scallops there, beautiful scallops, big scallops, and you try to go there and use as much time as you can because you get more money for the bigger ones usually.
Scallop fisherman Matthew Silva of New Bedford.
From March to March, our season starts in March, and you get more days every March. You get your days back, and probably 90% of the whole fleet has no more days left, so the few boats that do, they get killer prices right now.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.
That's great.
How about that for a
little
bit?
Great voice, great rhythms.
Yeah, yeah.
Great New Bedford.
Exactly. All right, so what else do you want to talk about here? We got a few others?
Yeah, I mean, it's lovely. Maybe the next one. This one is a good example of how sonics sort of change time a little bit when you hear them.
It'd be nice if I didn't feel guilty about not going fishing.
Peter Goldsborough at an undisclosed fishing spot.
It's like you're missing the party. Yeah, you're missing the party. What's going on out there? You need to know. It's somewhat of an addiction, I guess. I try and take one night a week to spend with humans. You got to do that to keep yourself sane.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.
These little tidbits are like gold, aren't they?
Well, I mean, what's funny? When you hear them, you realize nobody ever really slows down on the radio and thinks and breathes and pauses. I mean, that just stuff doesn't even occur, except rarely. And the sonics are the moment where you go, oh, wait, that's right. That sounds like what life is actually like.
And I guess it goes to show that what good listeners these students are as well, which I'm sure is something you teach them, because when you walk up to somebody and you say, hey, tell me your story, you know, you have to engage a little bit to kind of get some of this stuff out of people. And that's an art in itself, is just getting people to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like themselves,
like
in
themselves,
a real way. Yeah, not in a, like this.
Yeah.
Like because people tend to think this is how we should talk, like we're on a talk show.
Yeah. So what's the next one we're going to hear?
This one's got a really interesting structure and develops well. Vasco Pires of Falmouth telling about his recent trip to Cape Verde.
His name is Jose. So they say he has some mental problems. And so they tease him, say that he's crazy and everything. But, you know, he's proud of who he is. What does he like to do? He says he likes to sing. So I asked him, could you sing something? And I'll tape you. And he made it up. He made the song up. And so when the kids heard him, you know, and saw me videotaping, they said, oh, so now they start to look up to him.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.
Great little narrative,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. And so do they come back to you and say, oh, here's what I'm looking for here? I mean, how did you discuss the story ideas, I know, but the sonics, how did it just happen? They just go out and talk to people?
Yeah, some of these were the students moving towards what they thought was going to be a story. And it just didn't pan out for any number of reasons. Maybe the person they were focusing the story on, you know, had to leave and go out of town and you couldn't finish reporting the story. Other times you think there's something there that makes for a story, has a beginning, middle, and end. There's an arc, all that sort of stuff. And after you dig around a little bit, it's not quite there.
It's a nice little gem.
But exactly. So yeah. Then they go through and they pan for the gold and they find these just little moments that just kind of pop out. They don't. Sometimes it's about the piece of tape, the recording, mm-hmm. not leaving you. Mm-hmm. You leave the interview and you're thinking about that tape. Oh, my God, I can't believe they said that to me. Oh, I can put that on the radio. Yeah. Right? And they just sort of isolate it, edit it, mix it, do whatever needs to be done for it. And boom, they have a radio piece. By the way, that was from Jenny Gustafson. The one before that about the fisherman who can't stop fishing was from Ethan Cheel. And then Eric Jones produced the piece about the scalloper.
And we have one more.
You want to play Annie's?
Yeah.
Who's this one?
Annie McEwen from Newfoundland.
You know, that's home. That's where I always want to be. Like as soon as the tires go off the ramp, just right off the boat to go down that ramp, your whole body just relaxes and you're home.
Patrice D'Onofrio at home on Martha's Vineyard. You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.
Go ahead, Sarah. Did you want to say something?
Well, these are just great teaching tools. I mean, they're when students are kind of obsessing over a piece and they're, you know, trying to get all the nooks and crannies of this one person or this one story that they're telling for the feature that they have for the workshop, they can sort of lean back on, you know, some afternoon just walking around town, finding some person doing something that intrigued them and move towards that. And it doesn't have to be like this whole, did you prepare your questions? Mm-hmm. Did you look at your notebook? Do you have all this stuff planned? It's just like this one human interaction that actually becomes something that's, you know, at least here, really potent and arable. Yeah. So those are great.
And Vicky and I come into class for a day and go through them. And many of them get hooked on it and have done like 10 of them. and we reject some and take some and fix some up. And then they end up on our air forever.
Forever. That's right. Forever. So let's talk about some of the longer form stories before we get into one of my favorite pieces. Do they discuss the story with you as they're going along? I mean, obviously, they probably need some help. And I mean, the piece we're going to hear is a pretty long piece, but it doesn't feel that long. I mean, this grabs you from
right from the get-go.
Yeah. So, that's an art in itself as well.
Yes. We discuss them. We might even discuss them too much, I feel like, some days. But I'm really a fan of having a plan before you leave the building. Again, I don't want students to necessarily be infinite in all directions when they leave to go and do a story. They need to have some sort of sense as to what they think the story might be about and how it might be told. All of that's planned out in pencil because all the planning in the world doesn't prepare you for reality. And you have to be able to be fast on your feet and replace all the planning with what you really actually discover out there. Mm-hmm. But we think long and hard about who to talk to for a story, what angle, how to frame the story, what questions people should ask, what sound they should gather. They have kind of a to-do list when they leave. And then they have to be ready to crumple it up, you know, and just chuck it out, you know, because of what they find when they're out there.
Do you also tell them, don't turn off the tape recorder?
Yeah, always leave it on.
I was going to say, because this reporter did follow that advice. All right, so tell us what we're going to hear here.
This made me vibrate in a way that I hadn't vibrated before in a long time when I saw the first script for this. I thought it was genius right from the get-go. In fact, I don't think there were too many
We didn't really
edit iterations of this story. The bones of it have stayed in place right from the get-go, right from the very first script that the student put together. Emily Hsiao produced this story.
Hello. Hi, Hannah. Nothing. How you doing? Jesus, I haven't heard from you in a while. How you been? Actually, I'm with this girl, Emily, right now, that's interviewing me. She's a f***ing college kid or something. She's interviewing me. I don't know if she does a radio thing or something. And she saw I have an ad in Craigslist about getting rid of the swastika tattoo I got. She wanted to know about that. So now she's all curious about prison and shit. 24. I'm not doing that. What the f*** is wrong with you? I'm taking her home right now.
Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready.
I'd have to ask to turn the radio off because it's going to be distracting. And eventually, after you smoke, if we could close the window.
Jesus Christ. Is this going to be a trying experience?
Only if you make it a trying experience. I think it should be relatively painless. Relatively painless. Alrighty. Let's start with the basics. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
I'm Bruce Roderick from Centerville. I was born in Provincetown. 1951 to Portuguese parents, and I moved to Yarmouth in 1964, and what else?
Keep going. Just start from the top.
What do you want me to say?
I don't know.
I thought you were here to look at my tattoo. I have a small swastika tattoo on my left arm, and I wish to have it covered up. I cannot afford to pay what a tattoo shop is charging. It is only in a 1 square inch area. Please, if you do tats on your own, call me or text me. I just want it covered up, blacked out, nothing fancy. I did it when I was younger and I wanted it off. I started using drugs when I was 15. Summer kids coming down from New York and Provincetown, they'd be in little rich kids' private schools where they were already using drugs, and they'd bring that shit down. And the town kids would get around them, and we'd start using it, sniffing glue, smoking pot, taking pills, and then it just progressed to other things. I started using heroin, which I liked more than anything, and I just continued. Since that day, I've always done heroin. I don't do anything else. I dropped out of school when I was 16, worked a little bit, then I started getting in trouble and was a runaway, lived in the streets of Boston, and started going to prison when I was 17.
What was that for?
That was for a shooting and selling drugs. Summer 69, I believe, 69, yeah. I was going to go to Woodstock. I got arrested that weekend. I received 3-year sentence. I made parole. I was out for a month. I went back in. And then I started robbing drug dealers.
What was robbing drug dealers like? How'd you do that?
I would knock on a door. They would open the door. I'd put a gun in their face, go into the house, and take the drugs.
Have you ever killed anyone?
No. Why would I sit here and admit to something like that anyway? If I did.
Good question.
Right? I was robbing drug dealers, and that was my career. right up till 1985 when I went into a house. I went into a house in Centerville, and it was police were in the house. They posed as drug dealers. And there was a confrontation in the house. I ended up going to prison for, I spent 12 years in jail on that one. Then I got out again after 12 years, went back in again for selling heroin. We got out, went back in again for selling heroin. And now I just got out again. Now here I am. I've been out 2 years, almost 2 years. This is the longest that I've been out here free and haven't been using.
What's prison like?
What's it like? Prison is very, is racial lines. There's lines. It's, you have to hang with your own kind. And if you let a black or a Spanish or somebody that's not of your race take advantage of you sexually or whatever, then you become a punk, I guess. You know, you want some gum? Which means anybody can take whatever they want from you because you didn't stick up for yourself. You're fair game. I think I even got some pictures.
Pictures from prison?
Yeah, I got a couple, I think. But that's me when I was younger. That's a jail bird. My niece. That's me in a bar in Boston. Where's the jail picture at? That's my father. That's me in my mother's house. That's me down the Keys. My parents were devastated. No one in my family's ever gotten in trouble before, but they always stuck by me.
Do you think your parents should have practiced tougher love, or?
What, beat me more?
No.
Well, that's tough love. They didn't say, here, here's 20 bucks, go get high. No. My father was disgusted by my behavior. My mother was heartbroken. I was my mother's favorite. Of course not. They didn't want me to do the things I did. Well, you know, what are you going to do? You don't think of nothing else but yourself when you're doing those things you do. This is Norfolk prison here. That's me there. That's one of my good friends. He's a dope fiend. This guy I hung around with for like 10 years, right? And he was like my best friend. And I didn't know he was in for rape. After I found that out, he was... He didn't exist. You don't want to be with rapists, child molesters, people that do crimes against the elderly, people that abuse their kids, stuff like that. White guys... We do not take them people in. We have morals. The guys I hang with have morals. We don't take in scum. You know? And that's prison.
Whoa. I haven't even gotten to your tattoo yet. I've just been so enthralled.
That's a tattoo. See it? It's not even that big. You can barely even see it. Yeah, I got it done around 1986, 87. It was supposed to have, like, white power. I was covering up a question mark I had right there when I was a kid. And this guy, Willie the Rat, he did a lot of my tattoos. And I think he was in my cell doing a tattoo for somebody else, and I had some biker book or something. And I saw that tattoo, and I asked Willie if he could cover the question mark up with that. And I put that on, and now I want this covered up. That's all I want is that blacked out.
Did your buddies get swastikas as well?
Oh, yeah. Most of the white guys back then had swastikas. Swastikas, SWP, Supreme White Power, FTW, a lot of them had that. That's, you know, the big one, fuck the world.
Did it, the swastika represent Nazi ideas in prison?
No, it doesn't represent nothing. It's just a fucking tattoo. I don't have anything against Jewish people.
But that symbol, the swastika, says otherwise, right?
The swastika was just a symbol, period.
What does it mean to you?
I like the way it looks. I used to have a big flag up on my wall. I had a big swastika flag. I gave it to my roommate up in Revere before I moved out.
But you know that it carries so many connotations.
That's exactly why I'm taking it off my arm. I read an obituary about this Jewish guy that was in the camps. And this guy worked in the gas chambers, the showers. They would take the bodies out of the shower and bring them to be burned. This guy, that was his job. That's why he was able to survive. He was in there towards the end of the war. But anyway, he just died recently. And in his obituary, it said he had written this book. And I read the book. And then I just didn't want the tattoo anymore. Because it's a very offensive thing. And I am getting older. I don't want to die and have God see that in my arm. I spent over 30 years in prison. I'd like to have those years back. I never had any kids. My mother and father are both dead. They never saw me succeed in nothing. I'm 61. I don't have shit for money. You know, all of a sudden, I woke up and I was 60 years old. It just flew by. The time flew right by. All behind drugs. That's it. Are we done? Yeah, we are.
We are?
Basically, yeah.
I'm sorry.
But where are you going? Where do you have to go? I'll give you a ride, I'm saying.
Okay.
This interview's over. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Did it go all right?
Yeah.
We got to defrost. All right. What did you think, that dirty racist?
I didn't know.
What do you think now? Still that dirty racist? Still got that f***ing thing on?
Yeah. I do. It's around the corner here. Right on.
All right, you gotta get out of here.
Okay, thanks.
My patience will live it thin.
Thanks, Bruce.
Have fun.
Take care.
You better say I'm a nice f***ing guy in this.
Alrighty, thank you so much.
What's up, Shot Dog? Why the f*** didn't you go pick up Charlie that day? He is some f***ing pissed.
All I can say is wow. We should say that all of the stories from the Transom story workshops are up on the website, transom.org.
Yeah.
Right? And each of the classes for folks who may have...
Yeah, if you go kind of click on the workshop link, then you can kind of look back at the archives of what all the classes have done and all the stories they've that we've put up there to feature their work.
And in case we drew somebody in there who wasn't here from the beginning of the program, we are talking about the transom.org story workshops with radio producer Jay Allison, who's the founder of transom.org, Rob Rose Rosenthal, Transom Story Workshop's lead instructor, and Sarah Reynolds, associate instructor. All right, so I am sure there's some people who were thinking the same thing when I heard that. She found this guy on Craigslist and got in a car with him. I was thinking, Rob, you're a dad. Jay, you're a dad. I'm a mom. I'm going, what? But you did have some safety precautions. You had somebody following.
We did. Yeah. And I'll speak to this because I know Rob still feels like we didn't do enough, but I think we did. I think we did what we could. Anyway, we knew where she was going. We knew when she got back. She knew to be in touch with us. One of the other students went with her, got the guy's license plate. They drove off. Emily, the producer, and this guy, what's his name?
Bruce.
Bruce and Emily drove off together and went somewhere kind of nearby and then came back. Mm-hmm. Emily, Ruff says Emily wore her running shoes, which she later told him on a How Sound episode that he produced with her about this piece. But So I think, you know, we did everything that we could. That said, something bad could have happened. Mm-hmm. But she wanted this. And as you can hear in this piece, you know, she basically spent an hour and a half in the car with him, and that was all she got. Right. She didn't really get Bruce. She never got Bruce on tape again. There were all these plans, like, well, should she go and get the tattoo off with him if he does that? And it ended up just being, this was sort of just enough, and it's all she could get anyway because he wasn't really willing to go back on tape, and that was it.
You know what I think really stands out is you know, as you were saying, Rob, off the air, there's this naivety about, yeah. You know, she's just, she's asking these questions, and Bruce is, he's very honest. I mean, you can't believe how honest he is about his experiences. And I think part of that was her listening skills and just, you know, being calm and asking the right questions and letting him talk.
Curiosity.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, you're not going to make it as a radio producer. You have to be eternally curious.
Right.
And it's this idea, too, that Rob was saying, you make a plan, and we teach students like this, like have a plan. And then when you go out, if someone goes in a direction that moves you or you find curious or interesting or it blows your mind, you go there and then maybe you veer back. But even in this piece, she left that part in like, we didn't even talk about the tattoo part yet. But the rest of it is so like it's so crucial to knowing this guy.
Yeah. Very powerful piece, I think. Yeah. So pieces like that. There aren't a lot of opportunities to air something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there are shows like Love and Radio, Snap Judgment, shows that are doing some kind of funky things. Yeah. But
right. All right. So do you want to hear? Should we
just aired it.
Yeah. Well, we did. Yes, of course. But we're brave here at WCAIJ. You know that. And we did use the bleeping.
There's two versions.
Yeah. Do we want to play another one of the Sonics of the, you know, should we pick the one that Dan likes so much? This is the Texan Oysterman. Somebody want to talk about that?
You should play it first, maybe.
Okay.
Doyle Makeda, Oyster Eater from Texas.
Well, I'm from West Texas. I don't even know. How do you eat an oyster? Now, raw oysters I like, but you don't hardly eat them. You just sort of open them and let them slide right down. That's the way I do it. I love fried oysters, okay, and I've come all the way up here so I can get some good fried oysters. They're a little bit maybe on the salty side, but they've just got this great taste about them. I like beef too, but oysters are just different. I don't know. They're just great. They're delicious.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.
See, people come
online
here for different reasons.
At capeandislands.org.
Well, and this was
better than fish.
Sorry. I stepped on that. This was also another one of those that was produced. It's coming to me now and during the Vox Pop. So in that first week, Marnie went out and her question to ask people was, how do you eat an oyster? And so I think this is one of those pieces that came from that project.
And this is Marnie Crawford, we should mention. Yep.
I should send that one. You know, a lot of other stations have picked up our idea of these little interstitial, we call them sonic ideas, but a lot of stations around the country have taken the idea. We've encouraged them to. But KUT in Texas does it. I should send this. This could be a cross-cultural sonic ID.
Exactly. So talk a little bit about the bonding experience because, you know, they come in, as we mentioned earlier, they're a little bit intimidated, but they're working so close together and you're having all these sessions and they're eating dinner together and having these conversations. They bond pretty quickly, don't they, these groups?
They become a unit. Mm-hmm. Every single workshop, they each week that goes by, they become tighter and tighter. It's like a little radio family that develops over the time. And part of that's because of the difficulty of the circumstances that we put them in. Mm-hmm. Here's your tape recorder. Now go. That's frightening. And I think the bonding occurs over that. But we actually set up the workshop so that they're always working together. They not only are responsible for producing stories, they're responsible for editing each other's stories. Mm-hmm. They play both roles. And so I think because of the way we've set up the curriculum, the way this workshop unfolds, it immediately, you know, fosters the bonding. And they live together and they dine together and that sort of thing. It's pretty stellar what happens to them.
Yeah.
There's also a great tradition where the class before, in the last week when the class is jamming like crazy to get their last pieces done, and the class before but sends them dinner. Or
something.
Cookies come through.
Yeah, or pizza or something. They get like a gift from the last class that graduated. And then when they all graduate, there's this alumni group now that is also really coherent, all of them having stayed in Woods Hole for 2 months, which, you know, it's a particular thing to do.
Yeah. That was going to be a question. What happens to a lot of these now radio producers as they leave the workshop? Where do they go?
They go make radio. A lot of them are making radio now.
Yeah. Podcasts. you know, other kinds of web-based storytelling. Mm-hmm. Some of them work for nonprofits and use their storytelling skills in another setting mm-hmm. other than public broadcasting. But a healthy percentage are doing some kind of story-based work in public broadcasting.
I would say, actually, I would say most of them by far are doing storytelling in some way, and then a large percentage of that group are making radio. Because a lot of people come here with, you know, maybe they've dabbled a little bit in radio, but a lot of them are writers mm-hmm. or even established journalists or filmmakers. They're people who have done kind of story-y things in their mm-hmm. life before, and so this is just like a new way of kind of making that happen.
So, Jay, we just mentioned a while ago, this is the fifth session. So going forward, are you planning to grow this? I know you said something about a scholarship. You've got
applications are now open. I mean, people can apply, and they do from all over the world. We've had several from Australia, Canada.
Beirut. There was someone from Beirut / Sweden this year.
applications from England, from lots of places, mostly the English-speaking countries. But you can go on transom.org and find the applications. And we're just now wanting to start, actually the alumni have expressed interest, start an alumni based scholarship program. Mm-hmm. The alumni might administer it. We actually asked for donations at the Woods Hole Community Hall when we had mm-hmm. and people just were terrifically generous. Yeah. And we have a friend of ours, Alan Ditchfield, is matching that money. So we're going to try to be able to get some people who can't make it here. Mm-hmm. A lot of people said it was a really incredible transformative experience for them, and they felt a responsibility to people who couldn't manage to do this for financial reasons. So they're trying to write that, which is the best way to begin a scholarship.
Yeah. Got about a minute and a half left. Anything we left out of the discussion here that you want to mention?
We've started doing week-long workshops around the country.
Oh, you have?
We started to do them this past summer, one on Catalina Island. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, so say, Rob, you get the assignments.
A little too cush, maybe. upstate Michigan and Interlaken. We did one in New York City, and we're making plans to do them again this coming summer, 2014. Yeah.
We also just got a Knight Foundation grant to pilot a series of online workshops, mm-hmm. which are now being conducted by Scott Carrier, who's mm-hmm. a legendary producer in the country. And those are going really well. And the next one, I think, will accept all comers. Mm. So if you go to transom.org, you can see the work that's coming out of those. Those are radio, print, and photography, mm-hmm. and videography. And it's really successful. People are doing wonderful work. Very simple, almost sort of sonic-based condensed work. Mm-hmm. But you can go to transom.org and find out about all that stuff.
And so again, all of the stories that were done by the students in all five sessions available on the website, transom.org. You can also get there via our website, I believe, capeandislands.org.
And you can use your iPhone and make sonic IDs for us.
Let us know. Exactly. Jay Allison, radio producer, founder of transom.org and founder of WCAI. Rob Rosenthal, Transom Story Workshop lead instructor, and Sarah Reynolds, associate instructor. Thanks all. And I'm just loving hearing all the stories, and I'm so happy that it's happening here in Woods Hole so we get to air some of these things. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Vince produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.